We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Look out, girl. 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 Look out, girl.
Look out, girl. Look out, girl. Look out, girl. Look out, girl.
Look out, girl.
Look out, girl.
Go. How you doing, girl? You must just got out from out. Manic, panic, popping, copping, copping, overall. Bet you think you different. That's really cute. Well, I got something for you. Stop me if you need a clue. I get it jukin' it when I'm doing that footwork. These hoes be open to killin', but really look hurt. Overrated. Understood. Already said it, did it, spit it, get it, got it good.
Look out, girl. 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 Look out, girl.
Look out, girl. Look out, girl. Look out, girl.
Heck no. Wonder why busty bitches even try. Girl, join that core and get a job at Ross. With that uniform, if you wanna be the boss. D-E-A-D-M-E-A-T. Don't hate me cause you ain't me. I'm such a fucking lady, baby. Your nails look like some crunchy curls. Stacking up like Perfume Girl. Yeah, you better look that good like you really like my style. Come and get it, it's hot and ready now.
iTunes. Don't hate me because you what?
You ain't me.
Oh, there you go. That's the new single from Flostradamus featuring Kid Sister.
Yeah.
Lookout Girl, but spelled...
with two U's. That's what the kids are doing these days. They're spelling things different.
And that's a interweb. That's a future trend prediction. That's the voice of DJ Autobot, who will be dropping a set later and talking to us about music trends, which we've been talking about a lot in the last few months.
Yes.
So we're going to put it on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Put on the podcast. I'm one half of your host, Finger on the Pulse, Terry Diabolik, and
DJ Never Forget. Increasingly the trend of going by that name less and less these days.
We're wearing similar shirts.
You're never forgetting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I forget. Yeah, we are kind of matching.
Well, welcome to our last show of the year. It's only fitting that we would be looking forward on food and music trends as we come to a close on what was an interesting year in both food and music, I would say, and... we are joined by once again, Michael J. Whiteman of Baum & Whiteman, who we had, I think it was about a year ago.
So I haven't had a meal since.
No, when the Turner Port. So
you can pause the podcast now and go back and listen to last year's so you can see how it goes and welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back after your pause. So, Michael, why don't you explain to us what you do every year and what your industry trend reports are and why you do them?
Well, I run a restaurant consulting company. We have a giant firm of two people. And huge. We're headquartered in the great metropolis of Brooklyn. But we work all around the world creating things, and I guess the world would know us best because we created Windows on the World, which we also operated until somebody flew a plane into the building. And in addition to that, we created and operated the magical Rainbow Room on top of Rockefeller Center. And just so you don't think we're that highfalutin, we also did three of the world's first food courts. So this year I've been in Abu Dhabi, Mumbai, Chandigarh, which is in northern Punjab, Italy. I don't know where else I've been, but I've been in, I got a lot of air miles.
Sounds like good traveling, good eating.
It's good. It's good. You know, we like to say, especially to the Internal Revenue Service at tax time, that we're in the business of pleasure.
Yes, I work in food and I write off every meal.
That's awesome.
No comment, IRS. So
oh, good. They can audit you.
Yes, they can audit again. So. With your world travels, one of the trends that we talked about a little bit last year with more of a focus on Korean, but really this year, is that it's the whole world on a plate, and that it's as the world shrinks, more global cuisine trends are appearing on these shores.
Well, that's not all that's appearing. Your Thanks. Listeners should know that two pizzas just arrived. So if there's any background noise,
yes, that's what it is. It's because it's a common theme on this show.
Yeah, it's the crunch in the crust.
Right.
You know, we went into economic collapse about a little over 4 years ago, and when that happened, it happens every time there's a depression or the economy goes to hell, and everybody makes a big rush for what we call crisis food, which you call comfort food. And so everybody gravitates to macaroni and cheese and comforting roast chicken and voluptuous, you know, cheesy, soft things in their mouths and meatloaf. But, you know, after a while, you get a little tired of that. So the economic crisis hasn't passed, but we've gotten over the idea of comfort food. And we're actually moving into what we call the realm of discomfort food, that we're looking for culinary invention now. We're looking to be excited. And where do you find that? I mean, you don't find a lot of everyday culinary adventure and excitement in your four-star restaurant, which you only eat in once a year anyway.
Right.
So for the 99% of us, if you look down at the lower price portion of the restaurant market, you find fabulous innovation, particularly in the way people are combining things that never went together before. And rather than having the harmonious taste of a great roast chicken, you might now find a roast chicken stuffed with ridiculous things like kimchi in order to ramp up the flavors.
Right, right. And it's because those ingredients are cheaper? Or is it just because that they're new? Are we going to see a trend again where molecular gastronomy, because you said like discomfort food, you know, that was to go into a meal like that, you really had to be mentally prepared. Is this another thing of mental preparation because people can just put kimchi in chicken, or are people actually going for flavor combinations that work?
This is not for mental preparation. The idea here is to shock your taste buds and to make you sit up straight in your chair and go, woo! So we see food at being at a global crossroads now where practically anything goes. And, you know, two things happen at a crossroads. Either the traffic proceeds kind of willy-nilly, safely, and everybody's polite, or there's a collision. Right now there's a collision of global ingredients being squished together onto a single plate or in a single sandwich.
But how much of it is experimentation for experimentation's sake, or how much of it is actually going to be, you know, some sustainability in it? It's like, you know, it'll have like a long-lasting effect or find its way onto a number of menus.
Well, all innovation starts with experimentation. It becomes an innovation if people like
it.
One of the reasons it's happening at the lower cost end of the market is because the economic danger isn't all that great, both to the guy who's doing the experimenting and to the consumer. So, you know, if you go up to a food truck and spend $4 for a bulgogi burger, which is a hamburger full of Korean spices and ingredients, and you don't like it, you know, you're out $4, but right. It's not the end of the world. But the irony is that people are liking it.
Right. Now, do you find one of those things where places that are cheap to start with, like a food truck, have now found so much success because of this, they're really just becoming brick-and-mortar establishments even more than last year?
Yeah, it's happening a lot. A lot of people got into the food truck business and still are, probably too many, but a lot of people got into the food truck business because it is a fairly cheap way of starting a restaurant, especially since raising money is hard, and even more especially since landlords are very reluctant to lease space to people who've never run a restaurant or don't have a lot of money in the bank or don't have a track history. But as a result of having a successful food truck or two, you can now go to a landlord and say, I'm a brand.
Right.
And I got to be a brand, not through the normal channels, but I got to be a brand by Twitter and Facebook, and thousands of people know me now.
Is there like a loophole having a food truck with laws as well? Could you have your food truck and you don't have to have a lot of like the health laws and stuff like that as well that an establishment would have?
The health laws are now being applied rather stringently to food trucks, although they weren't at the beginning who thought about food trucks?
Exactly. Right.
But there were a lot of other costs that you don't have when you're running a food truck compared to a restaurant. You don't pay rent. You don't pay heating, ventilating, and air conditioning. You don't have credit card fees.
Right.
Any of that stuff.
As far as they go, it's like some of them have such limited menus. How are they going to be able to like sell enough volume to do a brick-and-mortar store, or is that going to be one of the problems that they face?
Well, let's go back to the why the food trucks were successful. First, they brought the food to where the people are rather than the other way around.
Right.
But the other is that, to take your point about a specialized menu, they had very limited menus into which they poured the best technique and the best care into every item that they possibly could, so that they were selling really very high quality, limited breadth, but very strong focus on the food. When you open a brick-and-mortar place and you're competing with somebody down the street because you can't move the brick-and-mortar place, you're competing with somebody down the street who happens to have an item that's stealing people from you, then you tend to put something like that on your menu. And then you end up like everybody else. It's part of a cycle.
So what advice would you give to them opening a brick-and-mortar store? Do you say, you know, stick to your guns or be open for change and additions?
I think you have to be open to change. And you have to be, and here's what the slippery slope part is, you have to be careful that everything you add to the menu somehow is of a piece to what you've been doing before, so that the quality standards are consistent across everything you do.
Now, it's funny because a lot of the larger food places like Panera Bread or Pizza Hut or burgers like that really try and serve the most limited amount of food as possible. And there's this thing what you refer to as the flavor gap, which people are putting on their menus, you know, different things, trying different things out to create a bigger name for themselves. And is that one of the things where they're just trying to add still like a small amount of same amount of items, but just different than what's normal on these big chains?
Here's what I meant by flavor gap. If you're a Panera Bread or a Kentucky Fried Chicken or any other restaurant, that was not my laptop that fell. It was really a piece of pizza hitting the floor. If you're a Panera Bread or a Kentucky Fried Chicken or any of those chains, you try to limit the number of items that you're bringing into the restaurant. You really don't want any inventory bigger than it has to be. So every time a hamburger chain or sandwich chain has a new item on the menu, it's usually a combination of something that's already in the house. The flavor gap is opening up because the innovative people that I've been talking about are using ingredients that are never brought into these chain restaurants. So on the one hand, the chain restaurants are massaging what they have. On the other hand, these innovators are doing really new stuff, and that's where the excitement is. And the new guys can do more exciting stuff because they're not constrained into having 500 stores around the country trying to do the same thing and retrain everybody and figure out sources of supply.
Now, one of these, I mean, this has been going on for a while in more high-end restaurants, but you're saying things like the innards and the odd parts, like the tongue and things like that, mm-hmm. are making their way into these sort of smaller restaurants.
You would ask me that when I have pizza in my mouth.
Of course, it's perfectly timed.
Unfortunately, there are no odd parts on this pizza, but it is happening around the country, but not in the chain pizza places. Domino's does not have cured beef cheeks on its pizza, but there are pizzerias that do. You won't find lardo on Pizza Hut, but you will find it on a lot of the artisan pizza places. So the notion of using innards and odd parts it has really taken hold for a whole bunch of reasons. One, because of the notion of nose-to-tail eating. Two, is the people are gravitating towards artisan kinds of foods. Sometimes they're called local, hyper-local, but it's things that are made by hand. So to me, a piece of meat that is going to be hot next year is lamb neck. Mm. Now, you won't find lamb neck in your local supermarket, and you hardly ever will find pork belly. You'll never find pork cheeks. Oxtails you'll find in some places.
Right.
When you see something like these cuts on the menu, lamb belly, mm-hmm. If you see them on the menu, then you get the sense that somebody picked up a knife and cut a piece of meat out of a side of a carcass.
Right.
And you feel somehow that that it's more real and it's safer and that you're not getting something that came out of a big corporate machine.
Now, are these types of things like lamb belly and oxtail, which are cheap cuts of meat, but they're more, and you say more thought, are these replacing comfort food, you know, your fried chicken and your hamburgers and things like that? Or are these being integrated, or are these rising side by side?
They're riding side by side, but more and more people are now become willing to experiment in things that they never thought they would have eaten before, in part because they're tired of the other stuff, the roast chicken and the meatloaf and the macaroni and cheese. And I have to say, you know, we talk about there being a big recession on and people looking for cheaper food. That's only part of it. The other part of it is that people are looking for new taste thrills, and these things that you've been talking about with their lower prices fall into the category of cheap thrills.
Yeah. Right. Let's play a song. You want to play a song?
Come back, and I want to talk about chocolate dirt.
Chocolate dirt?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's come back and talk about chocolate dirt and food trends, things like that. I'm going to play a track from Benoit Sergio, who played an awesome set at Le Bain on Saturday. It's called Boy Trouble. It's their single from this year, last year? I don't know. Stacky Tunes. We'll be right back.
All right. So before we get to Chocolate Dirt, I actually want to go to your three cautionary trends, a little bit of this, because this always interests me, like the, and you say it's the use of words artisan, heirloom, and local.
Yeah.
And then you throw sustainable and green into the category as well. And
I'm very skeptical about people who are calling themselves green, and I'm even more skeptical about people calling themselves sustainable, because nobody knows what the hell that is anyway.
So my larger question to that is
buzzwords.
I mean, they are buzzwords like local and organic, but green and sustainable actually have long, like very long term real implications that have, you know, an effect on the, you know, resources and population. So what happens when those words become trends and people get tired of them when they have such a significant impact in the rest of the world?
I agree with you about the long term importance of those two words. My concern is not yours about people getting tired of them. My concern is that those two words are having their meaning leached away by people who use them indiscriminately. So, I mean, there's no way of measuring what sustainable means. Do I have recyclable paper napkins? Does that make me sustainable?
Right.
If I switch from a hot water dishwasher to a cold water dishwasher, am I now suddenly green? If I haven't changed anything else, I believe that, especially the word sustainable, is being used as a buzzword and a slogan, but that it has nothing to do with reality and it's not measurable.
So, are you for like putting in a measuring system, or you think that it cannot be measured and just should be put away?
You can't measure it, and if it gets used badly often enough, then people will stop trusting it. Natural is one of those words that has no meaning.
But organic is, that's like, that has a regulation to it, doesn't it?
Certified organic has a set of regulations that are attached to it. And when was the last time that you walked into the kitchen of any restaurant that you were in and asked to see the credentials of the chicken that they just served you?
Yeah. Right. And I mean, anyone who does do that, it's name checked on the menu. I pretty much go by the fact that if it's not name checked by a farm,
mm-hmm.
then it's not organic or... it's more mass chicken.
Yeah, I would tend to suspect you're right, but you don't even know that it came from that farm anyway.
Yeah,
I guess if we go down that route, that I assume that everyone's lying to me, then yes. So let's talk about something.
I ran out of chicken today, so I went down to the supermarket and bought four more.
No, and right. you're absolutely right that like normally it comes from here, but normally it comes from here, but they're not going to come out and say we ran out of chicken. But some small places be like, we just 86 a chicken and we're out of that.
Yeah,
that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. But there's just no way of knowing.
No.
If somebody says there's a Ford engine in your Mercury, well, you know that's okay because they're made by the same company.
Right.
Okay.
So Chocolate Dirt. Why don't you just explain the idea behind this?
Chocolate Dirt.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just chocolate dirt. It's dirt.
Right.
If you go to California, primarily, where this is happening, and a couple of places in France, but not too much in New York, you'll find dishes being put together that look like landscapes. They're really quite beautiful, and they look like forests on a plate, or a meadow, or craggy mountains, and carrots sticking up in the air looking like trees. And at the base of the plate is something called dirt. With dessert, sometimes it's chocolate shavings that are made to look like dirt. On savory dishes, there are ground-up lentils that are made to look like dirt, and sometimes they're charred, so they're black.
And we've had that dish at Noma with the beets and the yogurt aioli and the, I think it's wheat.
Yeah.
It's like a dried-out wheat
yeah.
that they make it look like it's in a pot plant.
One of the desserts that we had there, too, was the chocolate cake crumbles.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like sticks and dirt.
Yeah, it looks like sticks and dirt. Yeah. But the idea is to somehow connect you psychologically with to the roots of the dish, to pardon the pun. And we're seeing a lot of that largely on the West Coast. But there is a woman on the West Coast named Dominique Crenn, who has a restaurant called Atelier Crenn, and she specializes in dirt too. But she's taking it a step further. She actually cooks her potatoes in the dirt that they were grown in. And that washes the dirt off before she serves it.
Is there a reasoning behind it? Does it impart a certain flavor?
I have no idea.
Right.
You guys went to Noma and I didn't. And I haven't been to Dominique. I know Dominique, but I haven't been to a restaurant.
I mean, there's that, you know, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, the thing about Noma is that he does take it, I know for that he does take a step further and actually serves moss, like fried moss and things like that. And I think there's still something that he's doing that's more of like a connection that you say to the land than it is here, where dirt is more of like a playful thing, and there he's actually serving dirt, more or less.
Yeah.
Like real dirt. Well, yeah.
You know, when Il Bulli was the number one restaurant in the world, and everybody made pilgrimages there, including chefs, you began to see the beginnings of molecular gastronomy spreading around the United States. And so now everybody is making pilgrimages to Noma. And so the foragers and the diggers and the bark peelers are now roaming the country, stripping trees bare of their bark and denuding the pine needles from them so they can put them on your plate. This is largely an esoteric thing.
Yes.
You know, God bless everybody. A good idea is a good idea. And,
you won't be finding pine needle Big Macs anytime soon at your local McDonald's?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And I don't think you'll find any Moss Burgers either.
I gotta say, though, usually around Halloween in the Midwest, because we make everything with pudding or some form of Jell-O, we have this stuff called dirt cake, where we grind up Oreos and throw in gummy worms. And it's I think it's a vanilla pudding in there. And that's... We've been doing the dirt thing for a while, but it's just on the dessert end of things.
Had a mother-in-law like that once. She could make leftovers out of fresh food.
Oh yeah, that's all the Midwest is right there. Casseroles.
Now, one thing that I'm noticing on this trend report that sort of ties into what Kurt does a little is the shifting in times of drinking and dining. And you're saying that people are drinking earlier and eating late.
Yeah.
And can you explain
there's a reason.
That? Yes.
There's more than one reason, but I'll give you one. It's an interesting phenomenon. About a third of the U.S. workforce works in what we call non-traditional environments. That is to say, they don't work for a corporation from 9 to 5. There are huge numbers, especially since people have been laid off, there are huge numbers of freelancers, consultants like me, salesmen, part-timers, people working on contract who don't even have offices. And they'll spend the better part of a day in their car roaming the highway going from point A to point B to point C to make their sales calls or meet their clients. And they're in touch with their colleagues largely by texting or instant messaging during the day.
Right.
And they need a place somewhere towards the end of the day to get some FaceTime together and rendezvous and have a short business meeting and figure out what to do next. And guess what? Around 4 o'clock, you know, half of them discover they didn't have time for lunch today anyway. And so they'll jointly decide to meet at some bar somewhere or some hotel that's got good bar food. And they'll have their
like
business
the
meeting at 4 o'clock, and that's when the drinking starts.
Oh, yeah.
And many hotels around the country have shifted the opening hours of their bars to accommodate these people.
Right.
So you drink and you have a snack at 4 or 2 and you call it lunch. And then you go home and you do a couple of hours more worth of work and it's 10 o'clock and it's time for dinner. And out you go again.
You know, but most cities from like being on, from traveling, I've noticed like New York, you can always get a bite whenever. But a lot of other, at least American cities, like you and Kurt would know this from touring as a DJ.
Yeah.
You try and eat at like 9:30, 10. You're struggling. I mean, unless it's like a hotel restaurant or something along those lines. Like most places, their push is at 7 and their doors are closed by 9 o'clock.
And the food's not the best at that hour too.
No, 9 o'clock dining in anywhere that isn't a major city is.
Well, I travel too, and I've been stuck with room service at 10 o'clock because I don't figure out where to go. But I have to tell you, more and more hotels are adding nighttime menus that are largely snacks, things you can pick up. even some of these Korean taco things, and lots of bars or restaurants with good bars are staying open later with a late night bar menu. I'm finding more and more of this. You're right, in New York, you can't go hungry. In downtown Philadelphia is another story. But no, it's true. There are more and more good restaurants with there are more and more restaurants with good bars. Awesome. And hotels with good bars that are staying open late, specifically for lunatics like us.
Well, it's just, it's like you said, there's just a shifting in work hours. You know, I'm sure if all of us could get up and bang out the normal 9-to-5 thing and get done when you get done, you know, sometimes we would want to do that, but it doesn't.
Yeah, we don't work that way anymore. We all work 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, I just get up and it's you know, a 10-hour day, but it's spread out over 24 hours. So to wrap up, let's do a list. Buzzwords of next year. And what we can look for. I think last year, if I remember correctly, there was like coconut water, Korean taco, bourbon, umami, macaroons.
Yeah, I like that.
Of the dessert one.
Hey, I was right about the macaroons.
You were right about the macaroons. And there was actually, I think, even like a couple of Times articles this year on the macaroons.
They catch up after a while.
This year's a little different. This year is a lot more about... I'm looking at it right now, and you can tell us, but it's about more about like flavors and essence and aromatics and things like that.
I think the difference between this year and last year, I think the buzzwords for this year have to do with foods that 2 years ago you didn't eat much of.
Right.
Fresh sardines, for one.
I love them.
Okay, but you know, you didn't find them on a lot of menus.
No.
But you are in...
Yeah.
You are these days. Bone marrow... and marrow bones are appearing all over the country. People are putting flowers back on food, which stopped about 10 years ago. Goat meat is coming. Shiso, which is a Japanese herb, which I happen to love.
Shiso.
You know, when you go to the sushi takeout place and there's a little plastic green thing separating them? Well, that's in place of shiso. Which is a really wonderful herb. It tastes somewhere between basil and geraniums.
Mm-hmm.
That's getting a fair amount of play. Green papaya. If you go to any place that has South Asian or Southeast Asian pretensions, you'll find the green papaya salad. And it's kind of crunchy, not like ripe papaya.
Right.
And it's got a little astringent to it.
And I'm sorry, there's something I don't recognize, and I'm going to butcher it. Nudja?
Ndoya.
Ndoya. Nailed it.
Oh, well, Ndoya is a spreadable version of almost like bologna, but very highly spiced, and it's thick.
Like a pâté, sort of?
Yeah.
Huh.
Looser than a pâté.
And what type of cuisine? Where is it from?
It's from Italy. And the point about Ndoya, it's suddenly becoming trendy on Italian menus. There's a lot of Italian food that people are now going back to revisit. You know, we had a big Italian explosion in the 70s and 80s, and suddenly all the Italian restaurants were serving the same food.
Right.
But now they're going back and looking at what they skipped over. Ndoya is one. Burrata is one.
Love burrata.
Yeah.
And this other one, Hakata?
Wakate.
Nailed it. Just really.
Wakate has several other names. Black basil. Wakate comes from Latin American countries, Peru in particular, but all those Andean cultures. And what's happening around the country is that the food is escaping the borders of the barrios. And all these little ethnic enclaves, the Peruvians and the people from Chiapas and the Poblanos, each have their own cuisines in their own neighborhoods, and they're all spilling out. So Huacate is one of those herbs that's coming out with them, as is, for example, Ají Amarillo, which is a yellow pepper from the Andes, which is both hot and highly flavorful. And so all these kinds of interesting things are happening out there.
Amazing. Right. And the world on a plate, right?
Yeah, the world on a plate.
Final question.
What's the one thing you'd like to see go away in 2012?
Oh, I'm tired of seeing gourmet hamburgers and people straining to put the strangest things on them in order to stand out. I mean, I've seen snails bourguignon on hamburgers.
Oh, whoa. In America? Not in America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've seen Creole shrimp on hamburgers. And, you know, of course, kimchi.
Right.
Which kimchi is the food of the year.
Food of the year. And what's one thing on your list that you didn't make it on, but now you think is going to really blow up in 2012?
I don't have an answer to that.
Fantastic. all right. Well, every year,
if it's not on the list, it's not going to happen.
There it is.
That is actually the correct answer.
And seeing how this has been recorded for podcast, we can check that next year when we have you back. Hopefully,
sold.
Michael, always a pleasure. Please take some pizza for the road. And we have DJ Autobot, who's one half of Flossadamus, is going to do a mini set. Then we're going to talk about music trends. Take it away on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you so much.
Good pleasure.
In the beginning there was Jack, and Jack had a groove, and from this groove came the grooves of all grooves. And while one day viciously throwing down on his box, Jack and Ola declared, "Let there be house."
Just a mini set. That wasn't even. That was just the tease.
That was the nano set.
I got a, that says middle of the mall shit, right?
Yes, it does.
What is middle of the mall shit?
I believe that term was coined by Riff Raff, S-O-D-M-G, aka MTV Riff Raff. And I'm gonna guess and just say that when you go to the middle of the mall, they sell the bootleg chains, they sell the bootleg iPhone cases, and what he's trying to say, Riff Raff, is his stuff is not from the middle of the mall. It's the legit. You go to Jacob the Jeweler, get your chain.
You do not go to Jacob the Jeweler anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Remember, who do you go to?
I don't know, but don't you remember that story where he ripped off like...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
What happened? He ripped off like all these people that made him famous.
That is right.
With knockoff jewels. I mean...
So he was middle of the mall shit then. Jacob was middle of the
mall.
Yeah,
I think, you know, I think he got greedy.
I think so.
I think it's like the same guy.
Times are tough.
It's like the same guy who...
price of gas.
The Cristal guy.
Who, Chris, what?
The guy, about the owner between Cristal.
Yeah.
Who shit all over rappers.
Oh, yeah. Drink yeah.
Cristal. Oh, that's right.
And that's
right.
Why Jay-Z started his own.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're talking with DJ Autobot about trends of the past. And I think trend number one is don't bite the hand that feeds you.
That is, yes.
That is number one.
That is what I'm going to live by in 2012.
That is 2012. And I think the hand that feeds us all is what we've collectively referred to as middle class dance parties.
Yes.
Is that what we're calling it? We need something a little bit catchier.
Middle of the mall dance parties?
No, because essentially, and Kurt, you can go into clinics more, but
yeah.
Middle class dance parties are not the basement underground parties, yeah. and it's not the Swedish House Mafia at Madison Square Gardens. It's everything in between.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's it's still going on in America. There are like the middle part, or there are the smaller parties and stuff, but there are the middle class parties, but there's a lot more small, like, bubbling parties in every city, and then there's the huge Swedish House Mafia kind of parties. But for a while there was a lot of in between things where Flostradamus, me and my partner and I, could tour and stuff like that, and as well as other DJs that were just a little over their local scene, and they were able to travel with it.
Right.
And so we've been seeing a little bit of a decline in that is.
And I think that's because people, as our partner in crime, Alan Astor, put it, he goes, you know, they'll go out, instead of going 5 nights a week, they'll go out one night a week. Yeah. And it's got to be and they'll spend maybe the same amount of money. Yeah. But it's going to be the biggest experience, not just this perpetual going outness.
Yeah, I mean, that trend's just kind of happening right now. I mean, there's parties like Ghetto Gothic and stuff that are able to travel a little bit and have their local party. And so it still is going on. It just wasn't as it isn't as frequent as it used to be. But I don't know. It's starting to change a little bit. But I think that'll have a resurgence again. It's just what's happening right now.
Yeah. So how does that affect acts like you guys?
We're not traveling as much, which is actually kind of good because Josh and I are in the studio a lot more now, which is a good thing. But yeah, that was our bread and butter forever. When we would make a couple of mixtapes and a remix, and we were able to travel on it for a long time and play other cities and stuff like that. So it's just been slowing down a little bit for the middleman.
Do you think it's just because times are tough and they're like, you know, we can spend X amount of dollars on a headlining DJ, or we could just build our own party up and, you know, it won't be that big of a difference?
I think it's just more how things were before. When the economy first crashed, people were like, I'm just going to go out and party no matter what. And they didn't care if it was a $5 show or a $15 show. They were just trying to forget their woes and the things that were going on in their life. And now it's still is that, but people, they partied themselves tired. So now they're just like, all right, I'm going to wait until whatever Animal Collective comes through town, and I'm going to pay the $25 for that show and then not go to these other littler middle ground parties throughout the week. Maybe I'll go to the cheap, like, Monday night party that's popping off every week.
That's free entry and
yeah, cheap drinks. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But they're not going to pay the $15 in the middle ground right now.
Yeah. I would say the $10 to $30 shows mm-hmm. are what's really suffering if you're not a band. And yeah. It's interesting because I think you have to get creative about it if you want to go on tour.
Yeah.
And does totally. That mean charging $5 a show?
Yeah, yeah. I think so too. And I also think it, I mean, we're talking in just the DJ world because the whole DJ boom has happened already, and it's kind of in a decline right now too. So I think that's why the DJ shows and stuff are taking a hit from it. But like you said, you can go to a band show that might be $15 and people want to pay it for that. But
well, I mean, I think you see though with just the Grammy Awards, Skrillex got 5 nods. Yeah. A-Track finally got a nod.
Congrats to both of those guys. For
and who else am I missing? A bunch.
Diplo got one.
Yeah, Diplo
got one. For that Chris Brown song.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't in the dance world, but it was.
Yeah, but I mean, still. Diplo, but still, yeah. I mean, what song did he do? I don't know.
He did Look At Me Now.
Yeah.
He did a bunch of new tracks. Yeah, yeah. It was Diplo and Afrojack.
He's not. I mean, he's getting that paper.
Oh yeah, he is. He is, and he's making awesome tracks, man. He did a, what was the other one? He just did a Wale track that's awesome. I forgot the name of it, but
track's gonna pay for those suits.
Yeah, it's true.
Those suits are free. I don't know who you're talking about. But I mean that's you know, it's one of the things where you actually really see DJs more than ever really in mainstream writing tracks. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's, but you have more than enough time. I mean, even that new Maroon 5 track is like a disco house track.
Yeah.
That Maroon 5.
You
have to think about from like a promoter standpoint.
Do I have to think about it?
You have to. Just from saying,
would you like me to think about it?
I would like you to think about
okay.
it.
Okay.
Come on, brothers.
So I did a walkthrough of a theater last week, and Sting was the headliner, and I saw it's like a crew of 20, all the guitar techs, all the sound techs, all those people who you have to pay. Mm-hmm. Versus a DJ who is, you know, him probably like a tour manager,
they're visuals guys because they're all doing 3D mapping now.
A bro.
And but I'm saying, like, you're looking at, and then for production costs, it's a stack of speakers for a monitor, CDJs or turntables, and that, and the cost.
Have you seen, though, like the Skrillex shows and things like that? Those are, and the Swedish House Mafia, those are giant productions.
And they are, but there's no way that it's the same amount of crew or money as it is for music, for live music.
And
you also, a band is going to play for maybe 45 minutes or an hour. You're going to get these DJs playing 2.5, 3 hours.
Hold on, no. Like when U2 plays or something like that, they play for like 3 hours.
Right.
Yeah, but there's only a handful of U2s. Like, but
Skrillex, there's only one U2.
There's not a U3.
Yeah. Or a U1.
There might be a
U1. But you know what I... But you understand what I'm saying. Understand.
There's like, a UB40.
But there's, That's true. There's also the... one of the things that I've noticed as well is that there's a... sort of like a loss in venue as well. I mean, Studio B is gone. And how many Studio Bs or places like that have shut down over the years because they can't maintain... Right. You open the door, it's like $5,000.
Yeah. And actually, Greg brought up a good point, too, with all these productions and stuff that are happening now. I think that's also why there isn't that much of a middle ground, because these days, like, everyone has seen a DJ now. Like, when we first started doing this, it was kind of like a cool thing. It was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the DJ night. But now everybody's a DJ. I'm sure half these people that are listening are DJs or know someone who
is a DJ.
Yeah, exactly. I got two sitting next to me here. Yeah. But anyway, that's
our niche is twins.
Yeah, yes. But that's what I'm kind of saying with all this. It's like everyone has seen that. So you need to, when you are Skrillex or Swedish House Mafia, you need to step up the production like crazy. And if you're a middle ground DJ too, you need to step up the production crazy because everyone's seen a DJ. It's nothing, unless you're up there like jumping off the stage like Steve Aoki, you're not doing anything entertaining up there. You're behind your laptop.
Who?
Steve Aoki.
Never.
Shouts to Steve.
Why don't we get a set?
One thing I have to say though is that this Swedish House Mafia show at EDC this year is one of the best things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And the best show I've probably ever seen was Daft Punk. And I've been seeing the amount of bands.
And the Swedish House Mafia guys had skydivers.
Are you kidding?
No, they had skydivers jump out of a plane, and then there was like a live feed from the sky, the skydivers coming while they were doing
fireworks.
Yeah.
Dude,
and they had like down lights, and they brought out the guy who sang on Save the World. I mean, it was insane. And like, no rock band I've ever seen. I guess U2, our friend went and said that they had a live chat with the people up in space.
What? Yeah, right.
No.
They did.
Dude, that's
he
so
He requested, awesome. I don't know, one of the songs about love to his wife from space.
I'm gonna real quick interject, too, because the Swedish House Mafia dudes are from Europe, and they've been touring Europe forever. And if you good listeners out there ever get a chance to just Google Sensation White or Sensation Black and check out those parties they have in Europe. They're intense. Like, the production values on those huge electro house parties are so crazy.
You know, and that's one thing, and we'll say before you set, is that, you know, it's funny that we're talking about dance parties and all these things like this in America, but if you go to anywhere else in the world, no one's suffering.
Yeah.
Everyone's still throwing awesome parties, and for like 4 days straight.
Yeah.
And that's just like a random Saturday. Yeah. Like Berlin or anyway, what's the big one in Berlin?
The Love Parade?
No, Panorama or Weekend.
Panorama. Yeah. It's like that, where it's like, yeah, you know, in, out, and people drop a couple hundred euros.
Yeah, well, the electronic music it's starting to stick a little bit in the States, but it's been here a few times and it's done its cycle, but it's never like stuck like it has in Europe, in all of Europe. It's crazy.
It's starting to stick a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like we said, A-Track and Skrillex are getting Grammys, so it is starting to stick, but it's always been kind of like a cool little fad for a little bit, and then it fades down and fades up. So hopefully it'll stick for a while.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when it doesn't fade away completely.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like, you know, like it stays here. And so like, what's going to happen, you know, unless someone like a Skrillex is going to keep doing dubstep for 20 years, like where he starts to change.
Yeah.
And you start seeing like the evolution of like American electronic music. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he's a really, really good producer. So I hope he produces some pop songs, which he kind of already did a little bit with Korn. But I'm looking forward to what he's going to produce for other artists.
All right. So let's get a set.
Cool.
Let's get a quick set. This is Autobot from Flustradamus. On our year-end show, we're going to be all over the world in the next couple weeks.
You will.
Whatever.
I'll be in New York.
Hey, everybody, it's Jessica. Jessica Simpson.
This is Beyonce.
This is Justin Timberlake.
Hey, this is Avril Lavigne.
This is Gwen from No Doubt.
Hi, this is Usher, and you're listening to Lost
Grin on the Show. Yeah!
man, I'm always been a fan of your sets. Before we were even friends, before I knew you, I was always a fan of your party vibes. I mean, I think the first time I saw you was at Studio B for that roller disker.
Oh, yeah, way back.
Way back.
The first time we met was that Vice party.
That's true.
Chicago actually, Cold 45.
Yeah, yeah, which was off the chain.
Yeah.
That
was my first time ever being in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah, and that was the first time I had hot dogs, and I like crawled back to my hotel room, and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this party because I'm so knocked out.
We went to Kuma's with you, right?
Yeah, later on.
You took us to Kuma's.
Yep.
Which, can you explain what Kuma's is in Chicago?
Kuma's is a gourmet hamburger joint, as our guest earlier today said. He was over those, but Kuma's is amazing. It's all metal themed, so... There's one called High on Fire, which is nothing but hot stuff all over a burger. There's pretty much all of the burgers are named after metal bands, and it's off the chain.
And what are those fries we got?
Ooh,
fries it's like a mound of like cheese and pulled pork, I think, and waffle fries.
Yeah, it's of course waffle fries, which are the best French fries in my opinion. But
now I know that you're a Chicago transplant.
Yeah,
New York versus Chicago for food. Who's got your heart?
I'm going to say, and what do you mean by heart?
Yes. I mean, heart attack is very easy.
Yes. I'm going to give it up to Chicago, of course, but this is the thing with Chicago. It's all of the local food, whatever it is, whether it's local Mexican, whatever genre of local food is great. But in Brooklyn, especially in New York, all of the food here is amazing as well. But it's all in like these little pockets and stuff. So you have good of all of that. But I've only been here for a year. You guys have to show me all the spots.
We've been showing you.
I know.
I gotta say though that Chicago Mexican definitely destroys on the whole. I mean,
I've had some good Mexican here though.
Now, not you know, but shout out to Dos Toros and all those people.
I'll shout out La Superior.
So, what does Flossy Dramas have coming up next year?
We since I said earlier, we've been in the studio like crazy. We just finished up an EP, but while we were working on that, we made a ton of other tracks. So we have another single coming out soon, which is more of a dance single. The last one was like juke and kind of hip hop. We're working with these kids in Chicago called 2080s, which are hip hop kids. They do like kind of like cool kids kind of vibe of hip hop. Doing some stuff with them, doing stuff with Tennille, the cool kids again, our boys from back in the day. We've been working with them again. Some Kid Sister tracks. We got some stuff on her album, some mixtapes. There's going to be a lot more coming out from us than ever before, which is kind of cool. I'm stoked for 2012.
Awesome. We got to play together in 2012.
Yes, let's do it.
It's been too long.
I know. The last thing we did was that thing at Santos, right? Together?
Yeah.
Yes.
Punches in for Vitamin Water or Heineken?
No, it was Heineken, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude, that was awesome.
It was.
Thank you. I think you got that for us.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you, guys.
Social media, how do people find you?
They can find us on Twitter via Flostradamus. You can just Google Flostradamus, and that's Flostradamus. And yeah, you'll find us on all the social medias.
And I got to ask, that's like Nostradamus, right?
Yes.
But floss.
Yeah.
Like fly.
Fresh. Yeah, like you're flossing.
Right.
I don't know. We made up the name when we were younger and we were...
It still works.
Yeah, it does.
It still works. How long have you guys been around again?
Josh and I have been doing this for 6 years now, probably.
Damn. Awesome. So why don't you take us out with one more track?
Okay, I will.
Do you know what it's going to be?
I don't. You got a request?
Did you play that song yet that you're going to give me?
That's the new single, so I won't. I'm not going to play it on the radio. I'm sorry.
I want to say that this is a single that I've been bugging you to do something with for 2 years now.
Yeah. We've been sleeping on this
one. So next time when I tell you... No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. All right. So we're gonna talk out the year. Hey, let me just say big shout out to All Heritage, Carlos, Jack, Patrick, Roberta's. Big shout out to MKG and the fine people at Absolute, Dos Toros, Momofuku Milk Bar, Mile End, Prune, Johnny and Annette, all of our friends and family.
Maison Premier.
And, I mean, it's been, I say it every year and I say it every time, but this is one of the best things that I do. It's like, I love it. It really is. And I can't wait till next year.
Yeah. It's a crazy year.
It's been a crazy year. You got nothing. I'm happy you're still here.
Yeah. I'm happy to be alive.
Happy for
go check out the podcast in April.
Yeah. Go check out the podcast in April, but, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Shout out to Mom and Dad. Joe, Jenny, Mary, Travis, everybody. Happy holidays.
Elena.
Big shout out to Elena. And look for us in 2012. We'll be talking about the exact same things we talked about last year. Just, you know.
Better.
Less ums and ahs.
Maybe. No promises.
No promises.
No promises. And right now, we're going to start thinking about resolutions, but I predict more of the same.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Greg promised to start cleaning more.
Probably not.
Okay. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Big shout out to Michael and DJ Autobot.
Shout out to you guys.
And thanks, everybody. We'll see you in the new year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back January 9th.
You can see into the future.